So either I offended about half of you, you left. That's right. Listen, I've gotten a great education in Hawaii time. You guys are doing better than they did at Oahu last weekend. We didn't have a 15-minute break one time at the Oahu conference. They got it down to 25 minutes, I think, by Saturday. But all right. So what kinds of problems do people have? So I told you I was going to whine and complain about what a hard thing this is to talk about in two sessions. So, in fact, I'm not even really going to talk about it in two sessions. I'll ask you to kind of bear with me, withhold judgment until we get through about lunchtime tomorrow, because I'm going to talk about this in a couple of different ways, the kinds of problems that people have. There'd be a couple of different ways to slice the pie. We could talk about some categories of problems that people are going to have. That's what we're going to do this session and the next tomorrow morning. We could talk about the specific issues that are on the table in counseling. A lot of times that's what people have in mind. We could talk about sexual difficulties and eating problems and domestic violence and those kinds of very specific things. But we don't have time to do anything systematic with those kinds of details. So what we're going to do is talk about some categories of problems and try to give some general wisdom about dealing within each of the categories once we get to solutions tomorrow morning. As we start to think about the kinds of problems that people come for counseling help with, flip to 2 Corinthians chapter 4. 2 Corinthians chapter 4. And look there at verse 16. Second Corinthians chapter 4, verse 16. It says, "So we do not lose heart, though our outer self is wasting away, our inner self is being renewed day by day. For this light momentary affliction is preparing for us an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison, as we look not to the things that are seen, but to the things that are unseen. For the things that are seen are transient, but the things that are unseen are eternal." Now, there's a lot that we could talk about in that passage. For our purposes tonight, I want you to just pay attention to two things. The Apostle Paul here talks about you and me in two ways. He talks about our outer self and our inner self. He says this is one of dozens of places in the Bible where the Bible says that human beings are made up of two realities. Every human being, we are an inner self and an outer self. The Bible will sometimes use the language of body and soul to talk about the outer self and the inner self, or physical element and spiritual element. A human being is an inner person and an outer person. The inner man and the outer man, the inner self and the outer self, it takes each of those things to make a human being, and the body and the soul are designed to stay together forever. In fact, they only are pulled apart in a freakish situation, actually, where sin enters the world and death through sin, and when a human being dies, this almost unbelievable thing happens where a person who God made to be a body and a soul joined forever, the body is ripped away from the soul at death as a punishment for sin. The Apostle Paul will talk about this reality in another passage in 1 Corinthians 15, actually from a standpoint of horror, that your body would be torn away from your soul. And that's why the great hope of Christians is not that we would die and depart and go be with the Lord. The great hope of the Christian is at the second coming of Jesus Christ, our bodies and our souls would be reunited to be joined together forever. The point is that you and me are both a body and a soul, and we can make distinctions between those two realities, but we can't ever ultimately separate them. Here's what that means when we're talking at a counseling conference about the kinds of problems that people have. In your life, you will have physical problems and you will have spiritual problems. Physical problems like headaches, ulcers, cancer, brain tumors. Physical things. Part of sin entering the world is that our bodies give way ultimately to death. And while we're sort of waiting for that ultimate death, we experience the death pangs up till it. So flu, it can kill you. It doesn't. Most of the time it doesn't kill you, but it causes a lot of suffering in your body. Strep throat and all the rest. You can have physical issues, and you can also have spiritual issues. You are overwhelmed with sorrow at the loss of a loved one. You are overcome with anxiety as you're late for a job interview. I guess you can be. Can you be late for a job interview on Hawaii with Hawaii time? You can be? Okay, all right. So Hawaii time applies to job interviews too, huh? So forget that analogy. We can be furious when our spouse doesn't do what we want them to do. These kinds of spiritual issues. We can have physical and spiritual issues. The Bible informs us about the reality of the physical and the spiritual. I would argue, though, that the Bible is only a sufficient guide for the spiritual issues that we face. It's not a sufficient guide for the physical issues that we face. Here's what that means. If you're overwhelmed with sorrow about something that's happening in your life, if you're confused about a decision that you need to make, if you are angry about a situation, if you're in conflict with somebody else, the Bible gives us sufficient resources to know how to help with that situation. If you need open heart surgery or a liver transplant or brain surgery, you don't want the last thing you see before the ether kicks in, your physician thumbing through the book of Revelation trying to figure out what to do, right? You should feel very discouraged if your cardiologist thinks that memorizing Revelation 4 is going to help him know how to connect the arteries to your heart muscle. So the Bible is a sufficient resource for spiritual issues, not for physical issues. That is to say, the Bible is a sufficient resource for counseling, but not for the practice of medicine. So no counselor, or at least not most counselors, are not equipped to practice medicine. There would be some exceptions to that with psychiatry, but even most psychiatrists don't do clinical psychiatry. They write prescriptions and see patients and that kind of thing, but they're not doing counseling per se. So the Bible is sufficient for counseling spiritual issues. It's not sufficient for the medical treatment of physical issues. In counseling, we're talking about the spiritual. But you have to be careful here. You have to be careful here because that can sound like it means something I don't intend for it to mean. The one reason you have to be careful is that because we are a tight union of body and soul, our physical and our spiritual interact in complex ways. So, so I'll tell you very personally. I have a twin brother, Keith, Heath Blaine and Keith Shane. And right before we left to come here, he had a seizure. He had a grand mal seizure. We were walking together and he fell over, and I've never seen anything like this. I don't know if you have or not, but it's a horrifying thing. And we are assured that he is seeing the best neurosurgeon in the world. Everybody's told us this guy that we're seeing is the best there is. And he and his team are not sure what is going on in my brother's brain. They know he's bleeding in his brain. They don't know why he's bleeding in his brain. He shouldn't be bleeding in his brain. You're not supposed to bleed in your brain. He shouldn't be bleeding in his brain. They don't know why he is, and they don't know how to stop it. And if they can't stop it, he is going to be in even more trouble than he's been in up to this point. That's a physical issue, okay? But that physical issue, you better believe, is leading to all sorts of spiritual concerns on my brother's part. He is anxious. He was talking to, we almost didn't think we were going to be able to come to do these conferences, actually. The day before we were supposed to leave, we're talking with the people we love and trust and saying, should we do this? And all of his doctors said, there's no reason why he shouldn't go. He's stable now. We can't do anything for a month anyway because they got to wait for the blood to clear out so they can, so the tests will be clear when they do them. So he's just waiting. So we're here. But as we were trying to decide what to do, my brother looked at me and he said, I'm going to die. And I know it. And that's a scary thought. It's not just this physical issue, and it bears no impact on the spiritual. The two are right there together. It works the other way. You can have spiritual issues that create physical issues. You can be so worried about something that you have all kinds of physical consequences. You can get ulcers because of worry. You can have diarrhea because of worry. People who are depressed, one of the symptoms of depression is that they get very little sleep or they get too much sleep. And so we have to be careful that we not think that there is some sort of tidy separation between the physical and the spiritual. You also have to be careful because the Bible has more wisdom about physical issues than you might be tempted to think at first. We don't have time to survey this, but the Bible gives all sorts of information about physical nutrition, about physical exercise. The Bible gives all sorts of physical information about sleep, all kinds of information about how to care for ourselves. The Bible has medical advice in it. Again, I don't want to go so far as to say that that wisdom in the Bible, which is authoritative wisdom, I don't want to say it's sufficient wisdom to practice medicine. But there's more in the Bible than you might think. And I always tell people, in fact, I always caution people, be very careful before you assume what is and is not in the Bible. People are really quick to write off the Bible before they've really engaged in a careful study of the contents of it. And so I want you to hear me say, the Bible is not sufficient to practice medicine, but there's a lot in the Bible about physical health that we can learn from, and so we need to be careful. And then another reason we need to be careful about this is even when something is obviously physical, people always need the spiritual care that counseling offers. So we go back to my brother. He's got an obviously physical problem. He either has a tumor that's ruptured, he has a nest of blood vessels that's ruptured. It's one of those two things, they think. That's an obviously physical issue. But he's sitting here in this hospital room going, I'm going to die, aren't I? What am I going to do if I die? What am I going to do if I'm paralyzed? I mean, he's at a real risk of the left of paralysis that would be permanent in the left side of his body. What am I going to do if I'm paralyzed? I'm not married. Our parents are dead. You've got a wife and three kids. What am I going to do? That is a question that is screaming. There's no pill you can give somebody to answer that question. There's no medical procedure. There's no injection. That is a question that is screaming for hope that you can only find in the scriptures. So these things are intimately connected, and even when it's obviously physical, people always need the spiritual care that counseling offers. So here's my thing. People can have physical and spiritual issues. In counseling, we're emphasizing spiritual care that's offered through the scriptures, because the Bible's not sufficient for physical care. But even when it's physical problems, the Bible still has something to say. And we need to be alert to that. In other words, you would never say to somebody in your church that had cancer, well, all you need is chemo. Go get the chemo and you're good. You'd want to read the Psalms to them. You'd want to pray Romans 8 over them. You would want to help them know the promises of the Lord Jesus Christ in their life. It's actually interesting, this passage. We don't lose heart, so he wants us to be encouraged. Though our outer self is wasting away, our inner self is being renewed day by day. You know what that says? It says every physical intervention will ultimately fail. Doesn't it? Our outer self is wasting away. You know what? If they fix what's wrong in my brother's brain, he's going to die someday unless Jesus comes back. My mom, who died of cancer a few years ago, she had a t-shirt that she loved to wear. It said, eat right, exercise, die anyway. All right? Now, we got somebody here that wants to order one of those shirts. Now, we might have question marks about the stewardship that's part and parcel of that message, but there's something really correct about it, right? No matter what you do, every physical problem, even when it goes away, we're all going to die sooner or later. Again, unless the Lord would return. There's nothing you can do to change that inalterable fact. But every physical intervention will always fail sooner or later. Counseling interventions have the chance of being successful for eternity, don't they? Our outer self is wasting away. Our inner self is being renewed day by day. You can be physically wasting away because of a cancer diagnosis, but growing ever more alive in your relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ. Physical interventions always fail. Counseling interventions, when they agree with Jesus Christ, will always succeed. So this gives us hope in the work of counseling. Now, what I want to do for the rest of our time tonight, and then picking up at wherever we leave off in the morning, is I want to talk about four problems that are common to each one of us. I want to argue that these are the four problems that are always on the table when people need counseling. I want to argue that each one of us struggles with these four problems. So that means when we talk about how to do ministry with people who struggle in these places, we're going to be doing ministry to people from whom we also need ministry. Biblical counseling is not like what happened in my brother's meetings with these neurosurgeons, where you have some dude who went to Vanderbilt and he's got 20 years of medical expertise and he's got people flying from all over the country and all over the world to meet with him. And when you sit down with him, he knows everything there is to know and you don't know anything. Biblical counseling is not like that. Biblical counseling is broken and messed up people giving wisdom to other broken and messed up people. We might be a little further down the road towards wisdom than somebody else is. But we will always give counsel as those who need to receive counsel, because the same problems that are on the table in every counseling situation are the same problems that we have in our heart. And when I tell you what these problems are, you're going to see this is you. If you have eyes to see, you'll see that this is you. And some of you are going to struggle to a greater or lesser degree with some of these, and others of you will struggle to a greater or lesser degree with some of these, but we all know what it is to struggle with these problems. And I want to argue that if you understand these four problems, then for the rest of your life, you can do and understand the kinds of counseling issues that are on the table. Now, you need to grow in wisdom. You won't know everything there is to know about these problems or how to help just after we've talked about them today. But I would argue that you're never going to encounter something that's fundamentally, qualitatively different than these four categories. Here is the first issue that is in each one of our hearts and is regularly on the table in counseling. It is the issue of anguish, sorrow. The old-fashioned term for it is melancholy or melancholia. The new term for it is depression or clinical depression. Seasonal affective disorder. But ever how technical or antiquated the label is, we all know what it is to struggle with sorrow, to struggle with anguish. Our experience of anguish can exist on a continuum, right? On one end of the continuum, we can know people who just struggle with a sort of stubborn, nagging sort of ho-hum about life. I counseled a woman one time who said, you know, there's nothing wrong. I just kind of operate with a low-grade fever of depression. She kind of got up out of bed every morning and was just like, kind of Eeyore-ish. What's so good about it, you know? We've all had those feelings, haven't we? I mean, listen, I'll be honest with you. As people go, I'm kind of a perky person. I don't tend to wake up and feel that way. I tend to wake up and basically feel pretty good. But as a person who's sort of geared towards the happy end of the scale, I've had plenty of days where it's like, gosh, I'm just sick of this. I don't want to do it anymore. So we can operate with this sort of mild, as my friend said, low-grade fever of depression, or on the other end of the continuum, we can operate with really extreme levels of sorrow. These are the people who we are aware, maybe they're suicidal. Maybe they can't get out of bed. Maybe they have tremendous mood swings. They're just over the top, sort of manic at some points of the day or some points of the week, and then down in the valley, depressed other parts of the day or the week. Maybe you've never experienced that kind of intense anguish, but there's people in this room who have. It's possible that with this many of you in here, that there are people going through one of those periods right now, and maybe you know why it is. Maybe it's because you lost a loved one who's dear and precious. Maybe you have had a very obvious circumstantial situation happen in your life. You lost a job. You lost a spouse. There's a real conflict in your family or one of your relationships. You've been exposed in a sin. Or maybe you don't know why. Maybe you can point to no reason why you feel this way, but you just want to die, and you don't know why. Regardless of where you are on that continuum, we all know what it feels like to struggle with anguish, with that sense of loss. We live in a broken world. We live in a fallen world. Life is hard, and life stinks sometimes. Listen to me. The Bible's about that. I mean, we'll talk about this some more tomorrow. It's almost flipping point. It's hard to find a place where the Bible does not talk about that kind of pain and the hope that God has for those who trust in Jesus Christ. You could spend the rest of your life learning and mastering and loving and persuading others about all that the Bible has to say about that kind of pain that we all experience sooner or later in one way or another. Another problem that's endemic to human living that we all struggle with is the problem of anger. We know what this is. This also comes in a continuum. It could be on the sort of mild end of the continuum. Things that maybe we don't even recognize as anger. Sometimes this gets called the clam up kind of anger. Somebody says something to you. Maybe your wife points out that she didn't like the way that you made a joke at her expense while you were out to dinner with friends. And you give it this. Okay, honey, are you angry? You see my ear? No, I'm not angry. I'm fine. Everybody knows you're angry. You know it. She knows it. The kids know it. Daddy, you seem angry. I'm not angry. I'm fine. I just want to sit here. Well, again, sometimes we don't even identify that as anger. It's not what we often think of, but it's anger. You withheld something from me that I wanted, and now I'm going to pay you back for it. On the other end of the continuum is the real famous sort of display of anger, and that's the sort of blow up. If it's clam up over there, it's blow up over here. And this is where we get to the obvious displays of anger. This is where there's yelling and screaming. It's where there's name calling. It's where there's cussing. There might be physical violence involved. This is the blow-up, explosive anger. It's every bit as much anger as the quiet, icy kind over here. It just looks a little different. The thing that they will all have in common is James 4, 1-2. What causes quarrels and what causes fights among you? Is it not this? That you desire and don't have, so you get angry. Anger happens when you want something that you did not get, and now you're going to make somebody pay for it. It can be obvious and loud and scary, or it can be quiet and icy, but it's anger. And we all know what that's like. We all know what it is to struggle with that response to life. For some of us, it is more of an episodic type reality. For others, we just kind of operate out of anger. I don't tend to struggle with anger very much. We'll get to my choice sins in a little bit. But anger doesn't tend to be one of them. And when I do get angry, it tends to be over here. Well, I'm good. Don't want to talk about it. Leave me alone. I know plenty of people. I got a brother, not the one who's sick in Louisville, but I got a brother who, if he gets angry with you, he's going to try to hit you. I mean, I've dodged more punches from my brother than I know how to count, because he just, that's how he is. And he's not a believer, and he doesn't have God's resources to change from that. But we all know what it is to struggle with that angry response when we don't get what we want. So that is anguish and anger. A third problem that we all deal with that's always on the table in counseling is the problem of anxiety or worry. This also happens on a continuum. On the one end of the continuum is, again, the sort of low-grade fever of worry. Here, we're talking about, again, this is mild, but it's just as much worry as anything else. It's January 16th, and there's $600 in the bank account. And you got your online banking opened, and you're looking at the $600. Actually, it's $597, and you're starting to chew your nail. And you're wondering how in the world you're going to make it to February 1 with $597 in the bank. You're not freaking out on anybody necessarily, but you have no category for how this is going to work out, and you just start to sit there and sit in a little stew pot of worry. On the other end of the continuum is the more extreme manifestation of worry. And this is the famous kind of worry where we start to experience physical symptoms. I mean, this is where we have stomach aches and people are bowed over with pain because their gut is really bothering them. This is where we have panic attacks. I've done counseling with people who came for counseling because they had a panic attack. And a panic attack, if you've ever had one or seen one, it seems like a heart attack. You feel chest pain, you feel like you can't breathe, you call 911, an ambulance comes to get you, they take you to the hospital, and even the physicians don't know when you first come in if you're having a panic attack or a heart attack. And they have to do some tests before they say, hey, you're not having a heart attack, you had a panic attack. These are really extreme, really debilitating, and even life-altering at times, experiences of anxiety where we have no idea how to manage. And that would be a perfect example of what we were talking about at the very beginning, where a spiritual problem begins to manifest itself physically. Spiritual problems of worry can manifest themselves in hyperventilation and heart palpitations. So, again, wherever you are on the continuum, we all know what it is to have that nagging sense of, to one degree or another, things aren't going to be okay. That's what worry is. Worry is, I want something that I think I'm not going to get, and I start to believe things aren't going to be okay. Things will be very wrong if I don't get that thing. So we've got anguish, we've got anger, we've got anxiety, and then the final category is the problem of avoidance. And avoidance is really the big category. All kinds of things go into the category of avoidance. And here's what avoidance is. Avoidance is, life is hard, I'm confronted with a problem, I don't know how to deal with the problem, and so I check out. I check out of my life where the problem is, and I check into an alternate universe where the problem is not. And the reason this category of avoidance is the biggest category there is because there are so many ways to check out of reality. So think about it. I'll just mention a couple. One way that you could do this is, let's say you've got a jerk of a boss. He's just a pain in the neck. He's always riding you. His expectations are completely unreasonable. When you don't meet his unreasonable expectations, he freaks out on you. And you are so grateful at the end of the day that you just get in your car and you turn on the radio and you're live and in concert all the way home. I mean, you pick your artist. I'm a country music fan, so you can start making fun of me anytime you're ready. But so maybe it's George Strait. Maybe it's Led Zeppelin. Maybe it's the Gaithers or the Gettys. But you just crank up the music and you just check out singing the music. Now, is it wrong to sing to the radio? No, it's not wrong to sing to the radio. But our heart is so deceptive, we can even take things that there's nothing wrong with and turn them into something that's not great, turn them into something that's bad. Because any response to a problem that does not rely on Jesus Christ and respond in faith, hope, and love is not a good response. Here's another example. Let's say that, let's go back to the computer screen at online banking. $597 in the bank account. You don't know how you're going to make it. You could pray. You could ask the Lord for help, and He would show up live and in person and help you. Or you could be an avoider. You could check out. You could go to the freezer and open up a great big carton of Ben and Jerry's. And turn on the television and not come up for air until the carton of ice cream is empty. Here's another way you could avoid. This is a true story. In fact, I told this story last week. A woman that I did counseling with several years ago, one of my favorite counselees of all time, actually a dear, precious Christian now, she had a horrible father, a terrible, awful, wicked man, who was mean to her constantly. And he would yell at her in front of the family, would yell at her in front of her friends. And this was a terrible thing because she loved her father. And her father was a respected man in their little community. And every time her father, who she loved and respected, would be mean to her, she would feel like she couldn't take it. She didn't know how to respond. And so she would go up to her room, and in her desk drawer, in her bedroom, she kept an X-Acto knife. And she would pull up her pants or whatever she had on, and she would cut a big gash in her thigh. She was a cutter. And the reason she did it, people have all kinds of reasons for cutting. I've counseled different people with all kinds of reasons. I haven't counseled anybody who did it for the same reason. But the reason she did it is because she couldn't stand the sight of blood. When she would see blood, she'd pass out. So she'd cut herself, watch the blood come out of her leg, and pass out. Because that was the way she got a break from thinking about what her dad did to her. And so when she'd come to, after she passed out, then she had a mess to clean up, and so she was able to focus on that. And that usually created enough of a time buffer that she could move on and go do other things. She was an avoider. I counseled one woman several years ago who was a heroin addict, had no income, her parents kicked her out, and she actually became a prostitute to fund her heroin addiction. And she and I had been counseling together for a little while, and we were kind of stuck. We weren't making any progress anywhere. Substance abuse is an avoidance behavior. drink booze or do drugs because I don't like the reality that I'm living in. I want it to go away, and so I drown it out or smother it or something. And we'd been counseling together for a little while, and we were kind of stuck. And what became clear, it's a long story, but what became clear is she quit trusting me because she was a heroin addict and a prostitute, and I was a religious guy and a pastor. So I just didn't get her. When I would say things like, you need to trust Jesus, you need to read the Bible, you need to come to church, we talk about religious things. Those were things that I could do because I'm a religious person, she thought. But she couldn't do them because she was a bad person. And she came to believe something terribly untrue, and that is that we were fundamentally different. And one day in my office, I told her, we'll call her Sarah. I said, Sarah, you think we're different. We're not different. We're the same. You and me are exactly the same. And she laughed at me. She laughed at me. I'm a husband and a father of two kids at the time, three now, but two kids at the time, and I've got a religious job. You're not the same as me. And she is sober now and not a prostitute and is actually in charge of a ministry at the church where she is and is serving the Lord and is actually a biblical counseling student and is a wonderful woman. But she said, sort of a couple months off after beginning counseling, she just couldn't believe what I said, that we were the same person. And I said, do you know what? And I told her the story about the night before where I got stressed out about something and I did the Ben and Jerry's thing. So I wasn't making that up. That was me, all right? I'm the Ben and Jerry's guy. You know what? Forget it. Where's the Ben and Jerry's? Let's go to La La Land with Ben and Jerry. And I... I told her, look, here's how heroin and Ben and Jerry's are different. Heroin is less socially acceptable than Ben and Jerry's, isn't it? And heroin will kill you quicker than Ben and Jerry's. But they're both substitutes for Jesus. If I'm uncomfortable, from a spiritual perspective, listen, don't laugh, I'm being serious. It's the exact same thing spiritually to get high on heroin as it is to stuff yourself with Ben and Jerry's. It's the exact same thing because neither one of them is Jesus Christ. Jesus wants to be the one who comforts us in our pain. Jesus wants us to respond to him with trust and love and hope and joy. And whatever we turn to that's not him, from a spiritual perspective, is just as bad as the next thing. That's why heroin, Ben and Jerry's are cranking up the radio. Anything that we turn to for comfort and help that's not Jesus will ultimately kill us. It's just a question of how fast it does the job. She would say to you now that that conversation that we had was the turning point for her. There were several turning points, but she would say that was the first time when she felt like she could start trusting me again. That we both were doing our God substitute thing. We both were avoiders. You can avoid in all kinds of ways. You can avoid with porn. You can avoid with adultery. I don't like my wife. I don't like the family I got. I'm going to run off with this woman or this man. You can avoid it. You count it. There's all kinds of ways you can do it. So that's why it's the biggest category. But those four categories, all the counseling for the rest of your life, anguish, anger, anxiety, and avoidance. There are a couple of honorable mentions I'll mention tomorrow. But before we get to that, I want you to understand that there's a crucial difference between the first two and the last two. there's something very important, crucially important, that separates anguish and anger from anxiety and avoidance. And you actually will not be able to help people in counseling if you don't understand the distinction between those two. And I will tell you what that is tomorrow morning. So, so you guys have a good night, and we'll see you back here tomorrow morning.